Six music.
This is a BBC Radio 6 Music documentary.
I'm Matt Everett, and welcome to The First Time on 6 Music. This is the series where we meet some of the most influential and best-loved musicians around and look at the seminal first musical moments that shaped their lives and their careers. One of the common elements in all great bands is that each member brings something unique to the group, that idea about the whole being greater than the sum of the parts. This is often true. In those terms, this week's guest brings a distinct sound and feel to his band. His unique bass playing adds a dynamic and depth to the group's recordings, and his phrasing and rhythm underpins the band's live performances. So we continue as 6 Music celebrates Radiohead season. I'm pleased to say my guest on The First Time this week is Colin Greenwood.
There's a gap where me, where I am, you begin.
In this interview, Colin and I look back on how he and his brother and bandmate Johnny started playing music, his early passions for Joy Division and The Fall, and the bonds that brought Radiohead together when they first formed in 1985. We also talk about Radiohead's first release, the Drill EP, how the band's sound evolved, and the public's perception of the group, and, of course, their upcoming Glastonbury Festival appearance. Colin also discusses his own deep passion for soul and jazz, and we play some fantastic music from Fleetwood Mac, Alice Coltrane, Sam Cooke, and Kid Creole and the Coconuts. But I started by asking Colin the traditional first-time question. Can you remember the very first time you were aware of music? As a kid?
Aware of music as a kid? No, I can't. I can't remember that. But I can remember, like, the first time I started listening to music, which is when I was in Germany, where my parents lived in the 70s. We had one of those little Rank turntable radio receivers, and my father had the massive headphones with the big coily lead. Yeah, but they had, like, you know, the usual thing. They had, like, about, I don't know, 10, 12 records, a smattering of classical, some Burl Ives, you know, some Scott Joplin, and of course the Sunday morning record, which was the Simon and Garfunkel Bridge Over Troubled Water record.
When you're weary, feeling small, when tears are in your eyes, I will dry.
Was there a fascination with music? Was it part of the furniture, or was it something that was treated in a certain amount of reverence, do you think?
I think my parents really liked classical, Schubert, Mozart. And when we were kids in Germany, so I would have been about 7 and Johnny would have been at 5, they bought me a guitar and they bought Johnny a recorder. Well, they bought Johnny a guitar and me a recorder. Well, anyway, and I think, no... You know, so and little pitch pipes to tune the, you know, I found the pitch pipes more fun to play than the record than the guitar, to record anyway. So we had that stuff together, and they encouraged it. It was, but it wasn't like they weren't like super musical people. Mm. There were rumors that one of our great ancestors sung in the choir at Westminster Abbey in year dot. But I never saw evidence for that. So, but yeah, so there's no great musical background or heritage in the Greenwood clan.
Another question we always ask is the first single that's yours.
Oh yeah, first single that's mine. Well, it's like I like to think the two musical choices that I made in early days was like sums up the rest of my life, musical life. And the first album that I bought at Haken and Bell Music in Abingdon was Kid Creole and the Coconuts.
Yet still, I can hear the Coconuts echoing in most of the work of your band.
You know, and since, you know, absolutely. And, you know, and since I've, you know, spent more time, bought more records, and I've seen the connections with Z Records and that sort of post-punk American labels coming out of New York in the late 70s, early 80s, and that there were sort of connections between Kid Creole and that really cool label. I think Soul Jazz Records put out a great compilation of that stuff. And, you know, and the Coconuts, like, hanging out at Stiff Records. And I think they did some work with Costello and Elvis Costello. And there was all various connections and stuff. So I'm trying to say they're even cooler than just Kid Creole, freestanding, and the Coconuts. So that was the first record. And the second record I bought was a single called Everything's Gone Green with Procession on the B-side by New Order. I was into Joy Division when I was really, really little as well. So when I was like 12 or something, so I listened to a lot of that.
What appealed to you about Joy Division at that formative age?
I think it was, well, I'm exaggerating a bit, I'm 13. Still. Well, my sister, you know, it was a big influence, 8 years older than me. So it was all The Fall magazine, Joy Division. So that's why I got the New Order single, because of, like, I wanted to find out what happened after Joy Division. So, and we used to cover, Radiohead used to do a little cover of Procession, I think. We used to, when we were playing, when we started up, when we were at school together in the 80s.
It's a problem, you know.
And it was a beautiful grey and blue card, Peter Saville design, sort of that sort of 30s Italian sort of futurist design, you know. And, you know, he did the album covers for magazine Correct Use of Soap as well, which was similar sort of Italian modernist, I suppose, whatever you would call it, futurist ideas. So, yeah, well, it's got to be Kikri on the Coconuts. Of course, Annie, I'm not your daddy, because if I was in your blood, you wouldn't be that ugly.
Johnny said that you used to play records very, very loudly, sort of inflicting them on the house. Is this true?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. My mum bought one of those like Sony Media Stereo towers with a smoke glass lid on the front.
Nice.
When she went to Green's Debenhams, so she was very, bless her, she tolerated our obsessions with music, and she put up with them, and she was very, very supportive. She had a bit of a zero-sum argument for why she wanted to encourage our music, because she said, well, at least it keeps you off the streets. Like, me and my brother would be pimping or selling drugs in downtown Abingdon if we weren't, like, practising in village halls, like, religiously with Radiohead from a pre-teen age. So
I was just trying to imagine the Greenwoods instead of the Craze.
Like, I know.
An Oxford version of these two. Watch out for them Greenwoods. Yeah, they're dodgy couple of geezers. Yeah.
She's like, I don't think there's any future in it, but at least it stops them from, like, you know, running protection rackets and things like that. So
when you started to play the bass, who did you want to be? Who was the poster on the wall? I didn't want to play bass.
I wanted to play guitar, because I played classical guitar with Tom when Tom and I had guitar lessons.
Mm.
So I want to be the guitarist in the band. But I'm settling some scores. I'm setting something straight here. I don't want to sound too embittered. Just slightly embittered. No, but Ed got the guitar first, and he wanted to be the guitarist. So Tom's like, "You can't play. You're not playing guitar. You can play bass guitar." It's like, "Oh, okay." Oh. But fortunately, I love my like Joy Division, and I love soul music. I'm a White Sox soul boy. So it's like Otis Redding was one of my first big loves and passions, and Booker T and the MGs and Donald Duck Dunn. So, and that's a combination of sort of simplicity and brilliant style and stuff like that. So that's where it came from.
What's the Otis track we should play then?
Well, oh, it's so many. I mean, obviously the famous one is Sitting on the Dock of the Bay. I don't know, a far, far, far sad song. Try a Little Tenderness. You choose.
Young girls, they do get weary wearing that same old shaggy dress, yeah, yeah. But when she gets weary, try a little tenderness, yeah. You know she's waiting, just anticipating for things that she'll never, 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 never possess, yeah, yeah. But while she's there waiting, and without them, try a little tenderness. Gotta do. It's not just sentimental, no, no, no. She has her grief and care, yeah, yeah, yeah. But the soft words, y'all spoke so gentle, yeah. It makes it easier, easier to bear, yeah. You won't regret it, no, no. Young girls, they don't forget it. Love is their home, happiness, yeah.
Why do you think you and Tom clicked when you first met?
I guess because we were in the same year, and I suppose it was the first people we got who got together with the band would be like Tom and Ed, and then if there was an order, and then me, and then I got Johnny in, and then so Johnny owes his place in Radiohead to me, and I never let him forget that every single day.
Every single day. On stage. Just wander over. You're only here because I am.
Although we did a show years ago when we started, and we played the Rock Garden, and I forgot the keyboard stand. And so he had to play with his back to the audience. And he's still, that's another thing he's embittered about to this day. So anyway, but I think it was a sort of disaffection with our surroundings. I think it was the fact that we were, you know, a place in our, where we just didn't like being where we were, you know, and it was a way of escaping into something else that we could make that was for ourselves. That's all, really.
Can you remember your first time on stage, your first time performing on stage?
I can't. I think probably it was this one when we did. The one that really, that I love, that I really, really am proud of, is we played this place called the Jericho Tavern in Oxford when we were 16. And we were like third band on of a three or four band bill, but the other band was this, it was the same band with different names. So basically there were two bands. It was us and this other band.
That's cheating. You can't just change your name and get twice as long a set.
We were called on a Friday at the time. I was in the bathroom, so I was looking at the poster of the first show up in the bathroom, which I started colouring in my name in red fat tip, and then stopped halfway through realising it was a bad idea. That's the story of my life. And making a decision, not following it through, and then regretting it bitterly, you know. So there's the poster to remind me every day. That's the first show. So anyway, we had like three saxophones as well, and we were playing. And it was like that was the time when it was the most exciting. That was amazing. It was in the summer of like 87, I think.
I can't afford to breathe in this town. Nowhere to sit without a gun in.
It's 25 years since the Drill EP.
Yeah. Gary Davies, was it Record of the Week or something?
What?
Yeah, it was DJ Gary Davies made it his record, his single of the week.
Hang on, back up a minute.
I know.
How does that happen?
How does that? Because it's random. And it's like, I remember Sunday morning, and it's the lyric is quite, you know, dark and intense and stuff. And I'm sort of in the morning waking up listening to this. It's like, you know, it's just like, and I thought when I heard it on the radio, it's on a Sunday on Radio 1. I was like, well, that's fine. It's like, I can do something else now. It's like, we've made it. We've put a record out and it's been played on the radio. It doesn't get any better than that. It's that, you know, it's downhill from there. So that was in 92, playing at the, I can't remember. I think it was Nottingham. And we had this other band. We were putting out Drill, they used to do cassettes for £2.99, but they'd give it to the shops for free as promo items. And of course, we were all very excited. We go to the local indie record shop in wherever it was, Leicester or Nottingham, and we see them there, and they're marked down for like 25 or 50p or something. And someone coughs, it's Johnny and Tom or someone, and they go and say, oh, that, you know, that's ours. And then, of course, the record store manager sees them and says, oh, it's your band, takes pity on us, says, oh, you can have them, gives them back to us. Oh man, feeling a bit sad for us because they're like, they're not shifting them that day.
There you go, lads.
You just keep, they'll mean more to you than anyone who's going to be walking to the shop this afternoon. So it was great. It was really cool. It was so exciting.
This is BBC Radio 6 Music.
Fleetwood Mac. You have the love of Fleetwood Mac.
Oh.
So what era Mac are we talking here?
Well,
go on.
Okay, Mac chapters. If we're talking chapters of Mac,
I can feel a radio documentary coming
on
already.
Come
on, actually,
please. It's one of my obsessions. Is that Peter Green? Let me tell, what's the story? My manager, Chris, turned me on to Peter Green, Fleetwood Mac. Incredible. Green Maharishi. I'm terrible for titles. Albatross, of course. All of that stuff, amazing. And then I, Tusk versus Rumours, you know, Ed in my band, Rumours, it's an amazing record. But for me, Tusk, it has to be Tusk. I'm obsessed with that record, you know, for all its ups and downs. It's what a masterpiece it is.
Because I think there is a Mick Fleetwood, John McVie,
yeah,
thing going on with you and Phil sometimes. I think there's,
well,
there's that simpatico, is that the phrase?
Well, I think... Well, not really, because in with Fleetwood Mac, it's very much, you know, that's, it's McVie, it's what's the name after their band, you know, so, but...
Or she would have been called Selway Greenwood.
Selway Greenwood, which sounds like a sort of regional solicitor's firm, doesn't it? Or something, or chartered surveyors, you know, rather than Fleetwood Mac. Which,
headlining Glastonbury.
Like, yeah, that's
Selway
right.
Greenwood.
That's right, you know,
it's not too
just
bad.
Wrong. There'd be, we, you know, whose name goes first as well, you know?
That's a row. That's an argument waiting to happen.
That's right. That's right. And John McVie, he didn't even get his whole name in there. He got Mac. Fleetwood got his whole name. I mean, that's not right. That's not going to happen.
What's the Fleetwood Mac track we should play at this juncture?
Oh Well, Parts 1 and 2.
Help about the shape I'm in. I can't sing, I ain't pretty, and my legs are thin. But don't ask me what I think of you. I might not give the answers that you want me to. Now when I talk to God, I knew he'd understand. He said, stick by me and I'll be your guiding hand. But don't ask me what I think of you. I might not give the answer that you want me to.
This is The First Time with me, Matt Everett, and my guest, Radiohead's Colin Greenwood. And that was Oh Well, Part 1 by Fleetwood Mac.
BBC Radio.
BBC Radio.
6 Music.
Oh,
I'm Matt Everett, and this is the first time on Six Music, where we look at the key first moments in an artist's career. And my guest this week is Radiohead bassist Colin Greenwood. And that track was Airbag, the first song on Radiohead's 1997 album OK Computer, an album that saw the group really start to deconstruct how they worked in the studio and rethink the traditional bass, drums, guitar, rock band sounds. Here's Colin.
That starts to kick in when you've like been playing a while and you get a bit better and you get slightly sort of more restless about what you're doing and wanting to try different things. So, you know.
But in terms of those sessions, do you remember sort of sitting down and pulling different sounds and listening to different records
yeah.
and kind of thinking, okay, this is a different kind of record?
I think it's that ignorance and self-confidence. It's when you're in your early 20s, you don't have a clue about anything. You don't have any fears. You don't have any mortality. You've just got this excitement and energy about all the stuff that you absorbed, like, when you were at school and college and stuff, and you can, you know, we just went off and did it ourselves and we didn't realise the implications of any of it. And that's what was brilliant about it. And it's getting back to that. It's like I was talking to Nigel who produced it, and he'd been listening back to like the sessions, and he said he's just remembered loads of stuff that he's forgotten about how to make records and how to use multi-track tapes and all the techniques and stuff that he did then, you know, that he sort of hasn't done since then, not because he's discarded them, but because it's sort of got, you know, clogged up with all the other stuff he's taken on board.
Where were your heads at afterwards? I hadn't watched Meeting People Is Easy for a very long time, and right. going back and watching it again quite recently, I was like, my God, everybody was having a really tough time right then, and I'd forgotten quite how hard
right.
carrying the weight of that record around appeared when right. you watched it from that.
I think it's because we'd been on tour a lot before with the Bends and other stuff before that as well. It wasn't just like the fact that we'd been working on OK Computer and touring OK Computer. I can't really remember, but, you know, and of course, you know, the way the film was edited, it missed out all the stuff where we went to like the West Indies and Bahamas and did the, you know, the car endorsement tours and all that stuff. You know.
Well,
that's
this is
I did up on the floor, the cutting floor, but no, it was like, you know, obviously there's lots of footage of people looking a bit tired and cold in Berlin in November, it's or whenever it was, you know, or stuff like that.
Let's talk about Alice Coltrane. Let's talk about when was the kind of love of this of the more jazz of the jazz.
Well, I don't know, but the jazz thing, Alice Coltrane, what is beautiful, expansive music. We used to come on stage to Alice Coltrane's music as well, and connections between that for me and people like Jay Dilla, stuff where it's like, you know, repetition. Chords don't change that much, but sounds and textures change within it and stuff. You know, that's all things that have inspired and influenced us.
If you're getting deep into Amnesiac, as you say, the bass playing is...
Yeah.
We're not in four-string root note territory anymore, are we?
No, but there's like, yeah, but I used to have bass lessons with this guy, and he would like, you could just change one note and you could play a different note under it and it would change the colour of the whole thing, you know. Like, there's a song called Bloom on King of Limbs and stuff, and I was just totally inspired by Dilla. Those people, those hip-hop artists or Stone's Throw artists, they'd be cutting up records which were sort of jazz, you know. And like Steve Lotus, Flying Lotus, he has family connections with that as well. I think he's family connections with Alice Coltrane. You don't just have to have a record player or a computer to play back a sample. You can play it on a bass guitar or a guitar or the same pattern or over say four bars. Any instrument is capable of being played like a computer. Like a computer can be like a musical instrument. If that makes any sense.
That makes sense.
You know, you can make loops. You can do patterns. You can do figures. You know how to, you know. Anyway, and then Tom used to say I used to noodle furiously too much across things. So it's been a good discipline to try and keep things simple and also within my relative limits of ability as well. So
to un-noodle.
It's all good. Yeah, it's to un-noodle. There you go.
Thank you.
by keeping yourselves to yourselves in lots of ways, it kind of protects you, I think, from outside world. But it also means that people, I don't know, assume a lot about your working methods, and they assume a lot, or they discuss a lot, or they focus in on every single possible comment. It must be difficult dealing with people just fascinated by the inner workings of the group.
I don't know. I think it's just, you know, well, but when we've put records out before, we've had like webcasts and we've done performances of the songs from our studio. So you can see us all like playing together. Like we did that for a record in Rainbows. We did these webcasts. So we have been pretty open about sharing where we work and what we do and stuff. But yeah, I mean, that curiosity of what, how it all works and stuff. You're always just trying to find different ways of getting excited and curious about it, really.
Yeah.
But what I love about what we do is the quality of our each person's response to what the other person is making or doing. That's what's cool about it. Because everyone is coming from a slightly different... It's not like we're all massive, like, Fall fans or James Brown obsessives, but we all have different things that we like, you know, so that's good.
This is BBC Radio 6 Music.
If you're in the studio, how often does a song come from, say, you and Philip? How often does that rhythm section... Is that the source? Does that happen very
much? Well, a lot of the songs and the music comes from Tom, where he's writing the songs and the melodies. You know, the thing that I love as well is that if someone comes up with something and then that inspires Tom, that which is, or he if he jumps on something that he hears, he likes, which is very cool. I really love that.
Is there an example of that happening that sticks in your mind?
Well, so we just played in Berkeley in San Francisco a few weeks ago, and this guy Les Claypool, who's a man called Primus.
Yeah,
he came to the show with his but he was talking about this song we've got called Nude. But when we were working on that song, you know, it was like, and in fact, it's going to be an early version of it, will be on OK Computer. I was obsessed with Al Green doing this song, this live version of a Bee Gees song, Live in Tokyo. It's an amazing soul song, and it's a Bee Gees song that Al Green covered. So that was, for me, was the, I thought we could do Nude like that. But anyway, I was just riffing when we were working on the song, and Tom really liked it and said, "I really like that, do that." So that's cool.
How can you? let me say this. La 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 la.
With Moonshake, Paul, you haven't, as a band, done very many interviews.
No.
About the, I mean, in the live set, there's an awful lot of songs.
Yeah.
But not very many interviews.
No.
Why is that?
I think it's because we're just not something that we think about, and it's not something that has been suggested to us to do. So the combination of those two things means it's, we haven't done it, not because, I think that's probably it, really. I think we just put it out and... We've never been that sort of interview. It's never been something that's been high up on our list of priorities.
Which is funny, because you're lovely people to speak to.
Yeah, I just think it's that thing, isn't it? It's like my brother, bless him. He hates radio, or hates going on radio, or hates TV, because he hates both. And it's not to do with his contempt of, like, mass media. It's because he thinks he sounds a bit silly on radio or on TV or whatever, and he feels self-conscious. So he just, like, you know.
But Moonshake, Paul, is one of your best.
It's beautiful. Yeah.
It's one of your best records.
We're all really proud of it, and for me, it's like the songs that Tom wrote for it, and the work that Nigel put into it, and the work that my brother put into it with all the string arrangements and the choral parts, and it's beautiful.
What's the best thing about being in Radiohead at the moment for you?
It's just the playing, and just enjoy playing on stage, and the opportunity to play to people who are really into it, like, in lots of different places. That's what I love, you know, and the fact that so many people from different ages and groups and really like it. I love that thing. I love it, yeah.
Tell me about Glastonbury that's coming up.
Glastonbury is...
soon.
It's soon. It is soon. It's quite soon. Hopefully, it's all about the weather, isn't it? And, you know, it's that thing where you play on the stage and there's this sort of bank in front of you. And it's about 50,000 people, and you know, it's the third largest city in the southwest when it's on.
It
which
is.
I love that, and you know, I just love it.
Is there a temptation to do something? I mean, just doing it is special, isn't it? Really, but sort of to do something that hasn't been done before at that performance. He says, really hoping you're going to say, we're going to get loads of strings on stage. Because, I mean, if there's a record to get...
Strings on stage.
You know...
Like the Scorpions, Winds of Change, when the Berlin Wall went down.
Exactly like that.
Fantastic. Lots of perspex dividing, like, the sort of slightly grumpy, haughty sort of cello and viola players from the rock nonsense that's being sort of... unfurled on, no, I think it's a terror, and then, like, usually there's a gust of wind everywhere flying. I don't know who it's, no, it's not,
oh,
a good look,
that's a,
you know,
shame. I thought if there was a record that you could do that, this
would be the record.
But no,
but no, I don't think so. No,
why do you think you've made it this far? What's kept you together? I mean, it's one thing being friends and one thing having a good creative relationship, but maintaining that is tough for anyone.
Yeah.
What's the secret of your success?
What's the secret? Well, I think it's something that, you know, it's something we wanted to do when we were at school. Like, most people want to be in a band or a fire engine driver when they're at school or something, don't they? And then it's that thing where it became that thing where, like, that's was the only thing you wanted to do. And then you started thinking, well, that's all you could do. It's a charmed life. It's an enormous privilege, and it's a brilliant way, if you're curious about the world and meeting people, it's a wonderful way to engage with people and to travel and to share ideas and to, you know, to communicate. It's a fantastic, very powerful combination of the personal and the emotional and the collective. That's what's great about it. You know, and that you're making something that is feeding into people's lives and memories that is entirely theirs and has nothing to do with yours. But at the same time, you've contributed to that, and there's a sort of communal, there's a sharing of that when people come to shows. And it's a powerful combinations of all those things, of the public and the private, that the music serves, that I love.
That's a very good answer. What else are you, you know, you've got Ed's making a solo record. Johnny's done solo records, Tom's done solo records.
No pressure then.
I mean, is there, you know, is Bass Odyssey?
I'd like to actually take this interview as the opportunity to announce and let everybody know that that's not happening anytime soon. The Bass Odyssey, that'd be great, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
But I think Q magazine had I think it was called the record of the bass record, Your Wind in My Hair was the name of the bass player's record, I think it was, in 1992 or something. So, no, I don't think so. But I would love to play with... In fact, if anyone's interested in any engagements, then I'd definitely be up for doing anything within reason.
Consider this the postcard in the newsagent window.
There you go. It is the postcard. That's right, the post office next to the missing cat sign and the dog walking.
What's the last song we should play? It can be anything you want. What should we go out on?
How about I don't know, Sam Cooke, That's Heaven to Me. Okay,
why that song?
Because I love Sam Cooke and the close singing vocals, and I've got this great box set out of Capitol Records back in the day when I nicked it from the president's office. So I love that, and it's a beautiful song. So there you go. He probably doesn't want it, but I don't think he's there anymore anyway. I don't think they're there anymore anyway. But anyway, so Sam Cooke, That's Heaven to Me. That'll do.
It's good to speak to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
The things that I see as I walk along the streets, that's heaven to me.
A little flower that blooms in May, a lovely sunset at the end of a day, someone helping a stranger along the way. That's heaven to me. Whoa! The feeling I have when I hear a touching prayer, it makes me know the Lord is somewhere near. Even the birds flying around in the air,
that's heaven
to me. Lord, it doesn't have to be a miracle in order for me to see, I know, the goodness of my Savior. Even the children playing in the street sang a friendly hello to everyone that they meet. Even the leaves blowing out, blowing out, blowing out, blowing out on the tree.
That's heaven
to me.
Music.
This is
Six Music.
Walking in the pouring rain, walking with Jesus and Jane. Jane was in a turtleneck, I was much happier then. If I were to tell you, would you just talk to yourself? much. You could do anything you wanted to. Am I asking over so much? Not just something that I can hold down. Cause it's all downhill now. That we swore and lied, that we tie ourselves to the railway line. Now let me count the times we cause we lied. Well, we knew no better, it was no crime. Let me count the times, let me count the times, let me count the times. Let me count the times, let me count the times, let me count the times. Well, I don't know when when I'll be content, but I do know I need a brand new friend. A brand new friend. A brand new friend.
BBC Radio, Six Music Documentaries.
Hey girls, hey boys, superstar DJs, here we go!
Hello, I'm Sean Rowling, and welcome to All Back to Mine, the show that visits the home and record collection of some of the world's biggest music stars. For the final part of the series, we're taking round to the home of Ed from the Chemical Brothers. It's music that brought Tom and Ed together, but not the music you would expect. They've treated us to a great selection of records, including the one that triggered off their worst ever DJing experience. But as for this first one, well, I'm not too sure about this one. But anyhow, welcome to All Back to Mine. What brought you two together?
Well, we met at university and we're friends because we did the same subject and we went to clubs together, but we also liked Guys and Dolls a lot. We used to see it when we were like 10 years old, do you know what I mean? And we were like survivors from that. And we saw it, we've seen it about, I've seen it about seven times.